On this second day of February 2011 in San Diego, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, General History, Chapter 17, Description of the Varnashram System, text number 42. Brahmanasya hideoyam.
Brahmanasya hideoyam.
Chudrakamaya neshyate.
Chudrakamaya neshyate.
Kritraya tapase cheha. Prityananta sukhaya cha. The body of a Brahman is not intended to enjoy insignificant material sense gratification. Rather, by accepting difficult austerities in his life, a Brahman will enjoy unlimited happiness after death. Purport. One may ask why a Brahman should voluntarily accept inconvenience in keeping his body and soul together. In this verse, the Lord explains that advanced human life is meant for serious austerity and not for insignificant sense gratification. By spiritual advancement, one is fixed in transcendental bliss on the spiritual platform and gives up useless absorption in the temporary material body. One should remain detached from the material body, accepting only the bare necessities of life. The Brahmanas, by accepting a troublesome form of livelihood, never forget that the material body is destined to grow old, become diseased, and die in misery. Thus remaining alert and transcendental, an advanced Brahman, at the end of his life, goes back home, back to Godhead, where he enjoys unlimited spiritual bliss. Without such higher awareness, how can one be considered a qualified Brahman? Those devotees engaged 24 hours a day in spreading the mission of Lord Krishna are beyond the platform of renunciation or sense gratification because they engage everything in Lord Krishna's service. A pure devotee of the Lord eats only to get strength for serving the Lord and does not accept either sumptuous or meager food simply for the body's sake. However, everything may be accepted for the Lord, even sumptuous meals. A Brahman who is not working day and night to spread the glories of the Lord should feel embarrassed to eat sumptuously for his personal sense gratification. But a renounced Vaishnava preacher may accept invitations from all classes of pious people, and just to bless their homes he will eat the opulent foods they offer to him. Similarly, he sometimes eats sumptuously to get strength for defeating atheists and impersonalists. As stated in the Vedic literature, one cannot be a highly qualified Brahman unless one becomes a devotee of the Lord. And among the devotees, those who are preaching Krishna consciousness are the best, as confirmed by the Lord himself in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Om jnana tamarandasya jnanandana shalakaya chakshu unmilitam mena tasmai shri gurave namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So here the real nature of a Brahman is that he embraces the principle of renunciation and the principle of austerity. The quality of a Brahman is that he's full of knowledge. That's the first thing. He has to know the Shastra. And throughout the Shastra, whether it's Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, the Vedas, the insignificance of the material body and the need to perform austerities to become detached from the body is taught. What comes to mind always in these contexts is Lord Rishabhdev, you know, very strongly speaking to his sons and the gathered sages who join them. Nayam deho dehabhatan loke kashtan kamanarate vidbujange. That one who has achieved a human body, what to speak of a Brahman's body, should not try to enjoy sense gratification, which is available to the hogs who eat stool. He uses the very word there. He's waking them up, you know, thin clays. Then what should he do? Tapo divyam putrakayena sattvam shudye jasma brahma saukyam tanantam. Same idea exactly as what's spoken here. That rather one should, through knowledge and determination and good association, embrace the idea of performing austerities, tapasya, in a transcendental way, divyam, not for any nefarious means, We were reading in the Bhagavad Gita how austerity can be performed in the mode of ignorance, to harm others, to get power, to conquer the world, like Hiranyakashipu. No, this is tapo divyam. And by that austerity, one's existence becomes purified. Sattvam shuddhyet. And by when the existence is purified, brahma saukyam tvanantam. Same word is used here, ananta. One can enjoy unlimited happiness. So the basic principle of the living entity in any species of life is to enjoy. We're trying to maximize the happiness and minimize the pain. There's nothing wrong with that. The problem is we don't know how to do it. We're trying to maximize the sense gratification and minimize the sensory pain. But it doesn't work like that. The material world doesn't work like that. You have a certain amount of pleasure and pain that's built into the body that from previous birth. And you're going to enjoy a certain amount and you're going to suffer a certain amount. It doesn't do any good to try to work very hard to increase one or decrease the other. This is right at the beginning of Bhagavatam, first canto. Narada Muni explains that. You know, tasyavaheto prayateta kovido nalabhyate yad brahmatama pariyada. Talabhyate dukkavadanyutaksakam kalena sarvata gabhira rangasa. So this is the last two words, gabhira rangasa. Means the power. Rangasa is a force you cannot stop. The force of time, the force of karma. But it's very hidden. It's not so obvious to the superficial vision of the materialist. So what's happening here? What does he say? He's explaining from the previous verse that if you try to be a devotee and fail, you don't lose anything. Nehabrikamanashosti. There's no loss or diminution. This is what he says in the previous verse. But if you try very good, you know, very hard to be a good karmi, a good materialist, whatever you gain is taken away at death. So there's no gain. For a devotee, every step, whether you're a neophyte or advanced or medium, is in your bank account. You know, in other words, you can't lose anything. What is there any loss if someone gives up his place in the varnashram, you know, the swadharma, a materialist varnashram? And joins the Hare Krishnas, you know, gives it all up. And then sometime later he can't do it, you know, yoga brashta. Okay, go back. What is the loss? Now people, he's saying there is no loss, but sometimes people think, oh, there was a loss. I lost that time, I could have got a good job, this and that. But really there is no loss. Because whatever you do and you accumulate outside of Krishna consciousness is all lost. But whatever you do in Krishna consciousness is in your spiritual bank account. There's no loss or diminution. You know. So this is what he's saying. And therefore, in this verse that I was tasyavaheto, one should strive prayateta. Let's look at that one word, prayateta. Yateta means to strive. Prayateta means strive really hard. To make it your main goal and strive as hard as you can. For that which you cannot find in any of all of 14 worlds. From up from Brahma Loka down to Patala Loka, Middle Loka, you can't find it. What's that? Krishna. It's Goloka. It's beyond this world. It's the transcendental reality. One should strive for that. Because just as your dukkha comes, your suffering comes unbidden, your happiness will come unbidden. It's built in. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean, the way I understand it, is that you know, you have a certain amount of money, or you have a certain amount of debt. It's not like that. It's the actual happiness, dukkha and sukha. You may have all the money in the world, but your happiness quotient is gone. You spend it all, and you're miserable as hell. You know, somebody's going to steal it from you. Your wife left you. Your kid got killed. Whatever. So you're miserable, even though you're sitting in a big mansion with all that money. Whereas some poor farmer in Bangladesh, they have the highest happiness quotient, according to the poll takers. He's there with his family, you know, living simply on his, you know, he's got his extended family, his kid, his bright face, intelligent, growing up. He's happy. You see what I'm saying? So the happiness and distress doesn't necessarily mean your externals. That's the idea. So you have a certain amount of dukkha, a certain amount of sukha. It's going to come ineluctably, means inevitably, according to your karma. Therefore, don't try to increase one and decrease the other. Just live simply. You know, maintain yourself nicely, keep body and soul together. If your family, keep your family together. But strive for your main goal to achieve ultimate happiness. That doesn't end, that there is no end. And that's the same idea here. This is what Rishabh Dev is saying. you know, very much, that my dear sons, 100 sons, it's not that they're all going to be sannyasis, 9 took immediate sannyas, right? Bharata himself was a householder, he was a king, you know, he didn't stay as a king very long, but he was a king for a while. And the others were all leaders, you know, they worked under Bharata to manage the world, the universe, whatever. But they took this instruction to heart, and there's many more instructions there. With very serious renunciation. Rishabhdev himself is about to leave for the forest. You know, so he's going to show by example that he give up every vestige of concern for the body and its comforts and all these things. So this is a principle, this is a Brahminical principle. We're meant to be Brahminical. Of course, we're meant to be real Brahmins and Vaishnavs. You can't be a real Brahma without being a Vaishnav. That's the basic principle of philosophy. It was a Prahlad who says, I don't think I know this one by heart. What is it? You know, one may be Vipvad Vishad Gnayutara Davindanaba Pada Davindamavakatsa Pacham Varishtam. Sorry, I know half the verse. I know the meaning of the rest. So he says that one may be endowed with these 12 qualities of a Brahmin. We know some of them from the Gita, Shamod Namasta, you know, self-control, mind control, sense control, cleanliness, forgiveness, all these things. There's 12 of them. So one may have that, but if he's not a bhakta, then the shvapacha, who is a devotee, the dog eater, is in a higher position. Because such a Brahman, who is just an official Brahman, he may have those qualities, but he's not really a Vaishnava. He can't even purify himself. But the dog, previously dog eater, the Vaishnava, can purify himself and his whole family. So this is a major point of contention. You know, there's a famous pastime with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who went and debated the smart Brahmins, the official Brahmins, who were denigrating the Vaishnavas as lesser because some of them came from lower families. And he smashed everybody. He proved. And that someone must have been taking notes because I have a book with all of that, those talks that he wrote himself. Yes. So, you know, why are we sitting here? You know, because following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who didn't, you know, who also smashed this idea, he exalted, he lifted up those who were, you know, born in Muslim families, those who were not born Brahmins, but were, you know, like Ramananda Roy and so forth. And following in that mood, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Srila Prabhupada were ready to make anyone a Brahmin. Even these Western Kali Yugites, you know, who had absolutely no aristocratic or birth assets, you know, because it all depends on your karma and your guna, your qualities and your work. If you're able to act like a Brahmin, then you can be recognized as such if you have the qualities. So one becomes purified, the Brahmins are always concerned about becoming purer and staying pure. They're very this is the thing, you know, the cleanliness is, it begins externally in the heart, and begins in the heart, it goes externally, and they're always trying to stay pure by embracing this idea of austerity. You know, this is the thing. And not just austerity, but kṛcchaya, severe austerities. Now, when the Vaishnav Dharma is taught by Srila Prabhupada, we have austerities, but basically we don't have really severe austerities. According to what you anything you read in the Bhagavatam, it takes your breath away sometimes, what they did. Okay, you know, the standard thing, the king goes out to the forest, and he just eats the fruits and the roots that he can find. You know, but that's just the first stage. Then you just eat the leaves that fall, then you eat the bark, and then you don't eat anything, and you just breathe, you know, and this is the way you... We don't have to do that, you know. But we have our austerities. The little austerities we perform are practically inconceivable for the ordinary person. You talk, you know, you don't approach everybody on the street and you don't speak so much, you know, in open form about the absolute necessity of the four regulative principles, because most people can't even conceive of that. That comes soon enough. But that's an austerity. Being here, showing up, you know, is an austerity. Regularly showing up for the regular programs that Prabhupada gave us. Yes, 4:30 to 8:30. That's if you can't do that, how are you going to become regulated? How are you going to become purified? In such an impure environment, I'm talking about the Kali Yuga, you know, the society we live in. As soon as you let up, on your regulation and on your chanting and on your the things that keep us pure, the impurities are right there, to come in through the sound, through the screen, that you're watching, and through the people who you meet, who, you know what I mean? Maya doesn't take a break, she's always there. Who is that? Jagadananda Pandit in his Prema Vivarta. Prabhupada would always quote this verse. What is it? Krishna Bhuli Se Boga Vancha Kori. Krishna Bhuli Se Boga Vancha Kori Nikatasta Mayatare Japati Adhari. So, forgetting Krishna, the jiva, the living entity, wants to enjoy. Krishna Bhuli Se Boga Vancha. Because of the desire to enjoy, that's why we forget moment to moment. We're forgetting for that reason. And as soon as we do, Nikatasta, Maya, who's right there next to us, it's not like we have to call her. Nikatasta Maya Tari, Japati Adari. She, for that such a soul, Japati Adari means just like the tackle on the football field. Takes you down and covers you over. The throwing down and the covering. And then what do you got? You're helpless, without the association. We've been in that condition for millions of births. We've been taken down, covered over. We don't know who we even are, what to speak of the goal of life. And we're put in situations, human birth and so many other births, where we're simply trying to survive and eke out a little pleasure somewhere, sex and food, basically, in the lower species, and somehow ward off the dangers of enemies as long as we can with our claws, our teeth, our flight. Until finally the body just, the machine just wears out and we get eaten or something. This has been our life. This has been our life for millions of births. But, by Krishna's mercy we forget. But now by Krishna's mercy we can also remember. And if you remember that, you realize this is all because of ignorance. So let's not forget Krishna. It begins with Krishna Bhuli, forgetting, out of the desire to enjoy. So to burn out that desire to enjoy, that's where the tapasya comes in. The do's and the don'ts. There's a series of do's and there's a series of don'ts. And both of them are important. You can't have one without the other. If you don't follow the four regulative principles, you won't feel inspired to chant 16 rounds. You won't feel inspired to stay in the association of devotees. I've seen so many devotees, come into association and leave the association. And I know, it's Krishna giving you that inspiration. You cannot stay, if you feel uncomfortable among all of this bowing down and this tapasya and this, this stuff. What is this? Your mind is taking you out. I have something else to do. I've seen it. So without the following the nose, you can't do the, and without being serious about chanting, you won't be able to follow the knots, the no illicit sex, no intoxication. They go together. It's a balanced program, Now, you have a vindaksha vimukta. When the devas are praying to Krishna in the womb, before he's born, before he appears from Devaki's mind and heart, they have this prayer that Prabhupada would always quote in this regard, and this very word kritcha is used. Kritcha means severe. It says besides the devotees, O Lotus Navel Lord, besides the devotees, there are others, the impersonalists. Now, the serious impersonalists, not superficial impersonalists you have in America who really aren't serious about anything, but those who are, serious Mayavadis, Brahmavadis, their intelligence is impure because they don't accept the service of your lotus feet. Ashtabhavat avishuddha buddhaya. Shuddha means pure, and avishuddha means not pure. Their intelligence is impure. So, even though aruha, they rise up through kritrena, severe austerity, same word used in this verse. Aruha kritrena parang padang. A few of them may actually come up to the point of Brahman realization through severe austerities. Why the severe austerities? Because the kama, the desire for sense gratification, goes very deep. It's infected the senses and the mind and the intelligence since time immemorial. So to burn that out, it's one thing to just go off in the forest and take a cold bath every morning, but then there's the deep-seated ones you've developed, So you got to constantly do that, perform the severe austerities, don't breathe, control the breathing, hardly eat anything. You certainly can't eat any prasadam. you know, a sumptuous prasadam. You can only eat dry leaves, you know, and just burn it out, you know. And somehow, if you can, the very few that can do that, they can rise up to Brahman, means to the impersonal platform, above the bodily platform. But, you know, it's boring up there. There's no Krishna, there's no kirtan, there's no prasadam, there's no devotees, there's no nothing. You don't even feel that you're a person. You're just, I am that I am, I exist. What a wonderful thing not to have any pain, you know. But that's a negative thing, you know. And therefore he says, patantyadho anadrita yushmarangaya. They fall down again because they're averse to serving your lotus feet. In other words, you're very proud of having been liberated. You know what I mean? If you're averse to Krishna's lotus feet, there's an element of pride there, a big element of pride. You see? Lotus feet means I'm just King Kadama, humble servant, you know. But you can imagine how powerful you'd feel if you were able to actually conquer the senses and the mind and rise above, you know, Brahma platform. There's got to be some ego there. Right? So you fall down again. So the idea is that the basic principle of this verse, as it's mentioned in the purport, we can apply to devotional life. We're meant to be Brahmins. We're meant to come. Brahman wanted to create a class of Brahmins, Brahminical devotees, who could then inspire others, who could then save the world. You know, the whole problem is there's no head. There's no Brahminical head to society. They're running around with no idea of who they are, what's the goal of life, and what to achieve it. So that can only come from when there's a class of Brahmin Vaishnavas who can teach, who can inspire others to somehow hear these things and that's how we got interested. You know, we met a devotee, we met the greatest devotee, Srila Prabhupada, through his books, and somehow by our previous sukriti, probably unknowing sukriti, agyata sukriti, we had a little receptivity, and we were willing to begin the process. You know, because it's possible to read, but not take on the process, and then so many doubts remain. The process of chanting and hearing and accepting, you know, the association has to be there. So the whole program is there. That's why there's an ISKCON. So chudra kamaya. Now the idea that the Sanskrit is chudra is insignificant. This idea comes up again and again. What comes to mind is Prahlad. Yan maitunadi griha medhi sukhami tucham. The word tucham means insignificant. It's similar to chudra. So he's saying there that, you know, in materialistic household life, the pleasure beginning with sex, you know, and adi, everything expanding from there, is very insignificant. It's just like scratching an itch you have, you know. You have an itch, you scratch it, there's some relief, and then it comes back twice as strong, you know. dukkha dukkha, I mean, it just produces more and more misery, you know, the more that you engage in it. So those who are wise tolerate this. And what for? So they can come to the point of ananta sukha. You know, if you try to get your sukha through the senses, you just get misery. Yahi sangs bhaja jo boga dukkha yona evate. Krishna has certified it. Those very pleasures you have, as Prabhupada says in the purport, are your greatest enemy. The pleasure you get from it is your greatest enemy, because then it comes back on you as misery. You know, as I get older, I'm just more and more grateful how much I avoided in, you know, these 40 years or so I've been in society. You know, you can get your pleasure from chanting Hare Krishna. If you can do that, it's the greatest blessing you can find. Because all the other temptations just, fall away. I mean, if you're doing, you're steadily, you know, going. And then, you know, all of this stuff, I mean, I just shudder to think the people I knew, you know, before I joined, that age, you know, I had a circle of friends, everybody has it. Where are they now? What have they been through? You know, what are they feeling, you know, in their mid-60s? You know, has their life been a success? Have they been happy the whole time? Have they been through 3 or 4 marriages? You know, has their poor son gone crazy because he took too much LSD? You know, they themselves may be depressed, a disease, so many things. Financial worries, oh my God, you know. And even if you don't have, those your loved ones have, you know. Anyway, it's just a veil of tears, you know. This is a phrase from the literature, and I missed out on all that. Thank you. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. You know, you can, the philosophy is just mind-boggling when you think about it. There's this phrase that I always forget from Jiva Goswami. What is it? I forget. But the meaning is that, you know, bhakti is very simple. It means taking your pleasure in the pleasure of the Lord. You know, taking your pleasure in Krishna's pleasure. And when you can do that, you may not even realize that you're doing that, why you're ecstatic, but that's what's happening. If Krishna's pleased with what you're doing, you're going to get a little dollop of ananda. You know, you're going to feel it. And if you're not, you're not feeling it. But to always, 24 hours, be taken. Now, Krishna's ability to enjoy is unlimited. That's obvious, right? So his ability to enjoy is unlimited. Our ability to enjoy, separate from him, is extremely limited. It's limited by the body, limited by the mind, which is certainly limited. That's the whole message of this verse, you know, and of so much of our philosophy. So, if we try to take our pleasures in the relative platform, body and mind, even intelligence, you know, speculating and doing all this stuff, then it's obviously going to be limited. And the very pleasures produce the pain, you know. You see in the drug industry, you ever see these ads for drugs sometimes? They'll say, take this drug, you know, for depression. And there is the idyllic scene with the green thing, and then the person is happy and smiling, and, you know, with the family. You know, I've come out of my depression. I'm happy now. Turn the page, and you've got like two or three pages of side effects, right? The side effect. Yes, you may lose your depression, but you know your liver will gradually be destroyed. Or if you feel vomiting and one of your legs fall off, then stop taking. I mean, this read them. It's scary. You know, why would anyone take it? Because they don't turn the page. It's the same idea. Well, they turn it and they don't want to know. It's just like that. It's a metaphor for sense gratification. People don't want to know. I want to just enjoy now and the heck with the future. And the more that you're in that mode, that's the mode of ignorance. And the more suffering it'll be. The greatest enjoyment, I've never taken it, you know. Heroin, you know, puts you in a state beyond anything you can feel, you know. I don't know, whatever. But then what? Poor heroin addicts. I grew up in New York City. You know, there's half of the heroin addicts in the country are there or more. You know? Anyway, it's a horrible scene. You know, you destroy your life, your family, you become a thief, you don't care. You know, you care about your children. Everything just becomes that one thing, you know, to try. And it's not even a pleasure anymore, it's just relieving the pain. That's the epitome. That's the, you know, the archetype of sense gratification. Perfect lesson. And it's all like that, sooner or later. Even the refined mode of goodness kind of sense gratification. But if you can take your pleasure in the pleasure of Krishna, your ability to enjoy becomes unlimited. Right? Logically. Krishna's pleasure is unlimited. If you're always giving him pleasure, and even if you're not giving him pleasure, but you're pleased because others are giving him pleasure, that's your, you see that? That's how Vaikuntha works. That's how Goloka Vrindavan works. Is that, oh, you know, read the Chaitanya Charitamrita. You know, and you get to the commentary that Lord Chaitanya wrote, apparently, on the last verse. There's a whole song there that he sings. Comment to the last verse. Ashlishyavaparadatangbana. You know, Krishna may kick me away, he may embrace me, he may corrode my heart by not being present before me. But, though his cruel and crooked ways may cause me constant woe, Krishna is the only Lord my heart shall ever know. That's the last lines of that Shikshastika. So then there's a whole commentary on that. And then that Radharani speaks, Lord Chaitanya in the mood of Radharani. And he says, if a Christian doesn't want to be with me, he wants to be with another gopi, then I will jubilantly take that hand of that gopi and bring him to Krishna. Bring her to Krishna. You see? This is a key element. You won't find that in the material world. If my husband doesn't want to be with me and with some other woman, then I will take a gun and go shoot him. Or shoot him. See the opposite. 180 degrees. Jealousy. Envy. My. But Radharani is completely identifying with the pleasure of Krishna. And if for some reason he wants to be with another gopi, fine. That's my joy. I'll take him. You see? So since Krishna's ability to enjoy is unlimited, then you're always, and you can always remember that, then you're always in bliss. Especially in the community of Vaishnavas where there's so many who are serving Krishna. You know? And you also try to do as much as you can and bring as many others in. Because the more that serve Krishna, the happier you are. You're forgetting completely about yourself, you see? And you find yourself always immersed in ecstasy. That's actually what the spiritual world is about. And the most amazing thing, that Krishna is also concerned about the pleasure of all the others. He knows that their pleasure is in serving him. And so he's making arrangements so that they can serve just the way they want. You know, he's responding to Mother Yashoda as a little child. He's playing in such a way to just draw out her ecstatic love. He's responding to his friends as a friend. You want to play with God? Okay, I'll be in that mood. We can play forever. You know, their only pleasure is giving him pleasure in playing, and his only pleasure is giving them pleasure to let them play with him and like that. So there's no tinge of kama, which is selfish desire. That's all there in the fourth chapter, Adi Lila. Study it carefully. So that, even down to our little neophyte platform, if we remember that mood, then we can become more determined and serious in following the principles and becoming more strict and embracing austerities. You know, I remember in the when I first started. I'm sorry, it's getting late. Joining Brooklyn Temple in the early 70s, that was like embracing severe austerity. You know, at least from where the platform of everyone was, you know, New York City. So there's the cold shower austerity, you know. In New York in the winter, I joined in March, it's still plenty cold. Then. And I don't even think there was any hot water. I mean, it wasn't an option.
What's that?
You want to be a Hare Krishna here? This is what you have to do. So I had a little technique that I used to try to mitigate. Because I had been studying yoga, you know, hatha yoga, you know. And they have this heating breath that you do. Like that. And it works. So I get into that shower, freezing cold, you know, freezing cold, barely above ice, you know. And I would do this breathing, rapid breathing. And I swear, it worked for me. It wouldn't even feel that cold, you know. And but still, it's a cold shower, you know, as you come out of it. But you feel, okay, I'm a yogi, you know, I did it, you know, you feel good. And you're ready to go to the morning program, you're wide awake for sure, you know, and you're Hare Krishna, you know. And but if you can't do it, then what happens? You know, you feel, oh my God, you know, how can I make it? You know, your mind takes over, you know. It's just like a, you know, we took some pretty short showers, I got to admit, you know. It's not the 20-minute hot shower, it's the 5-second cold shower. But still, you do it, you know. So the point is, and there's a whole series of austerities, you know, just getting up, you know, going out. We would go out on the subways and do magazines and, you know, like that. It's purification. And then you come back, and then that was the program, the evening RT. You know, everybody's blissed out. You just did some service all day. Come that, boom, you know, 7 o'clock. Everyone's bouncing off the walls, you know. Kiba jaya, jaya gora chandra. There's Gaurachandra smiling at you from the altar. You're remembering that beautiful, that wonderful RT. You know, if you know the meanings of the words, it increases your appreciation 100%. You know, it's Mahaprakash. It's Gaurachaitanya being worshipped on the bank of the Ganges by all those great devotees, you know. There's, I forget who's doing what, with the Dulaya, with the, you know, the charmer. It's just an RT. You're remembering that, and you're in the RT, you're in the experience, and then it's Hare Krishna, you know. And it's time for a little Krishna book, and hot milk, and take rest. Dream of Krishna and get up in the morning. You know? Another cold shower. Okay, you know, I'm ready to go. I mean, it's not, you know, really Kritchaya in the absolute sense. Kritchaya means severe. But it was severe enough for us, and it was what Prabhupada prescribed. You only have to do what's prescribed. You don't have to invent new austerities. You know, that's another kind of problem. But if you just do what's prescribed, you know, you'll find yourself making nice progress. And then you can at least begin to understand the idea of ananta sukhaya, of unbroken happiness, unending happiness, after death. Forget about after death. You can start experiencing that before death. You know, that's the power of Krishna consciousness. Atakshi Krishna nama adi. No, I'm sorry. Iha yasya hari dasi. Karma nama na sagara, nikalasha pivastasu, jivan mukta sa uchite. Jivan mukta is a living entity who's liberated even in this body. What's the prescription? Iha in this verse means activities. Hariya dasya, karma nama na sagara. It's a very simple formula. All the activities of your senses, karma na, manasa, your mind, and your voice, Gira, are engaged in the service of Hari, Harir Dasi, simple word. Karmana Manasagana, Nikalashtrupyavastasu, all of them, all the time, then you're already liberated. And of course you're also in bliss, there's no question. Any questions or comments about these few points? I'll read the translation again. The body of a Brahman is not intended to enjoy insignificant material sense gratification. Rather, by accepting difficult austerities in his life, a Brahman will enjoy unlimited happiness after death. Hare Krishna. But just one note, if you're wondering where the garland was, I was afraid it would be lost. I took it home and put it in the fridge for the cremation today. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.